Hello and welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. This is the continuation of our Modern Security Application Month, and we are talking about a new topic today. We're talking about the importance of data in a modern security application. In a modern security stack or application, as you look at it today, there is a lot amount of data that's being collected by every possible source. Nowadays, we have multi-cloud logs. There is a conversation about how do you extract logs from different sources? How do you even transform them or localize them or normalize them in a way that you can have some form of threat detection on them? In today's conversation, we have Jonathan Rao, who is a CISO for Lightspin.io. And today, we were talking about his past experience about building up a Sec Data Ops team. Why is there a need for having data scientists in security teams? Why is data so important in the move as we go into the future? And the importance of security data lake, building it today, starting from what does a startup need to do to think about data capabilities? Why is it something that he should even consider? Like, isn't that a problem that we have been solving it ourselves by using SIEM solutions? The answer lies in the fact that we are not data people. So when we are thrown a lot of data, sometimes the conversation is not simply as easy as I've got 1 petabyte of data and I'm going to transfer it onto this S3 bucket. But it's a lot more around, I am generating 1 petabyte of data every month or sometimes every day. How do I solve this problem? It is a data problem. It's not a security problem. We go into a lot more detail about why is there a need for more data conversation. And as you would go through the conversation, you realize Jonathan is quite passionate about the Sec Data Ops space. And it's also important to understand that maybe if you are a team which is trying to do a lot of work in monitoring or at least trying to build that work, you should probably consider that. If you enjoy this episode, or if you're listening to the Cloud Security Podcast for the second, third, or fourth time, maybe while you're working out or walking your dog or doing your dishes, or maybe working in a garage, I would really appreciate when you have a moment and when you've done what you're doing, maybe if you can spend a few moments to give us a review or a rating, it really helps us find new people that we can help out. And in a world where we still are waiting on a lot of physical events to come back, this is probably a great source to have for people who are trying to work in the cloud security space. I hope you enjoy this episode with Jonathan, and I look forward to talking to you over the next episode. We are continuing our This Is Our Security Architecture with Azure Security Best Practices in this month as well, which would have been the last episode that you would have heard on this podcast. You can also still watch it on our YouTube, and the part 2 of it is coming next week. And look out for our YouTube channel. If you're subscribed to the YouTube channel, you probably would get a notification anyways. But if you're not, definitely check out the YouTube video and the podcast episode when it comes out. I also wanted to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who came to Cloud Security Meetup New York and made it a success. All of you who dressed up as well in the tech fashion theme as well, I am really grateful for it. Thank you so much for doing that. I hope you enjoy this episode as well. And we are off to Amsterdam now to have Cloud Security Meetup Amsterdam next week. Definitely check out if you are in Amsterdam and would love to say come and hello. Definitely check out the episode. I'll leave a link for the meetup page on the website. It's a free event and it's a community of cloud security advocates and about to be cloud security advocates that we're growing. So would love to see and meet people from Amsterdam who are there in and around. Definitely come and say hello and enjoy this episode in the meanwhile. Otherwise, I'll talk to you in the next episode. Peace.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. We are continuing with our September month of Modern Security Stack. We have spoken about API. We have spoken about security monitoring, but we're talking about data today. And for that, we have Jonathan. Welcome, Jonathan. Welcome to the show. It took us a while to get together in person, but this is the, for people in context, the second time we're recording this. So this is going to be really interesting. For the audience who doesn't know Jonathan, can you tell us a bit about yourself as to what your background is and how you got into your current role?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having me, Ashish. This has been planned for a long time. We finally made it happen here at the lovely Lightspin office in New York. But hello, everybody. I'm Jonathan Rao. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for Lightspin. I'm also the author of a couple open source tools, Electric Eye, which is a CSPM, and Synthetic Sun, which is, don't use that one. I've been rewriting it for 2 years. But, you know, it fits in with the data thing because I'm going to make it kind of a distributed data tool. But how I got the role, you know, I was in the military doing completely unrelated stuff to technology.
Yeah.
Mostly messing with explosive devices and things like that, you know. Take that where you want to. Yeah. Got out, got a job as a project manager and kind of worked my way up through the ranks. Got into NBC Universal, got a role with Amazon, met Eli Kahn, who is the principal product manager of the security hub. And I crashed a customer, QBR. Oh. And I was like, hey, Eli, you hiring? He was. I did the security hub thing, and then from there I jumped over to IHS Market, ran cloud security, defense and security. S&P Global acquired us. And
yeah, nice.
We were like, hey, we should probably get out of here.
Not saying anything about S&P Global.
Sorry, S&P Global. I was like, I don't know about this one. And met Vladi, the CEO of Lightspin, for drinks in New York in like the middle of COVID. We met at like a speakeasy of sorts.
Oh, nice.
We could actually like go and sit down somewhere and had a couple IPAs, and I asked them, you know, to be the CISO, and for some reason they agreed, and here I am 13 months later, you know, things haven't gone wrong, which is great.
Pretty awesome. I think because we're talking about modern security stack, it seems like you've come from a very unique experience from building explosives all the way up to kind of into security. What do you define as a modern security stack?
Yeah, so when I hear modern security stack, I think of two things. It's both the tooling that we use as well as the skills of the modern, you know, security warrior, you know. So, you know, when I think of like the modern tooling, right, from the technology side, it's like using these new, you know, multi-domain best-of-breed tools, right? Like Gartner's done a lot of work in defining all these different categories, right? You think of like XDR, right? Extended Detection and Response, CDR, Cloud Detection and Response, the CNAPP, the Cloud Native Application Protection Platform. I hope that's right, because that's where we are. But, you know, so it's like actually, you know, being able to use and adapt these tools into your environment, right, where it's like you could start shutting off those onesies and twosies. And I've been in places, right, where we've had 40 different tools because they're just very laser focused on getting the best of breed. We had to have everything to, you know, find, fix with, and destroy threats. And now it's like, hey, you know, maybe not. And also when you have disparate tools, you create silos.
Yeah.
You lose context, you lose meaning, so it's better to have it. And then on the people process side, it's having people actually harness that thing, you know, like modern thinkers in the space, you know, maybe security folks who are trained in data, maybe security folks who are formerly software development engineers, SREs, platform engineers, who kind of understand what it's like to be day in the life of a product team, use these new modern security tools and be able to, you know, effectively, you know, quantify, qualify risks and, you know, meet security outcomes for whatever that is for your security program.
Yeah. How different is this from a traditional security side? From what you've seen in the past and where we are today, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned in the past, I guess in a word, it's silos, right?
Yeah.
Where the old, you know, security program was like, hey, you know, let's make sure that we're meeting some compliance requirement and then we're just going to buy up a ton of tools, right? And back then it was like, you know, kind of lower level telemetry, right?
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
I mean, even in my military days, it was like, you know, running like individual antivirus, individual sensors, running cron job and syslog. You know, you folks that still work in data centers, right? You know and love, you know, the like layers one and zero routers, and blue coat proxies, and, you know, your big honking Palo Alto appliance, right? And then you're pulling the individual logs out of there, and then maybe you're doing something with the log data, maybe you're doing a little bit of baby ETL, and then you're throwing that in with SIM, like a V-Radar or Splunk, and then you're running your detections on top of it, and somebody else runs your indexes, and maybe they even manage the Splunk for you, and you just sit there and hunt the threats and hope that you know, you get lucky before the threats do.
And today, in today's day and age, I think one example that I keep going back to, I feel like cloud has brought in a cultural change as well, like from what sysadmins used to, at least the ones that I used to work with, they'll remember the web address for, it's 1234 IP is for web server, 5678 is for application server, there's a load balancer, whatever. Like, that kind of conversation has also died down. The more abstraction that's come in with cloud, do you find the same as well?
I have, It's a bit of a double-edged sword, right, where it's like, yeah, it's nice that we don't have to have a CMDB and have to remember what, you know, web-dev-srv- you know, some like identifier for like a data center, like NJ4 or, you know, EWR1 is, right? Where, and then you had to go to a different team, you had to get a feed from them, right? They wouldn't give you the data. Save it for my CMDB, double security person. And then, you know, it would just take so long. But the nice part about it was that people actually went through and defined taxonomies and classifications and CIs, and they had change boards. But cloud has really disrupted that and blown a hole through it, where it's like, hey, today, you could take anybody of just about any skill level and put them in front of a console. If they click around enough, they could build a machine learning tool. They could build an augmented reality tool with like Sumerian. They could, you know, even create like a deep fake with voices, right? They could launch a blockchain app. So what that means is that security teams have had to, you know, change up. Tools have had to change up, where like the slow agent-based CAB-driven thing wasn't fine anymore, because all it took was a dev swipe at a credit card. Like, hey, we need to do this POC. We do it now. Then you have to react to it. And being in a reactive rather than a preventive state in security is a planning for failure, and that's the worst kind of planning there is.
Yeah, and I think to your point, how many people actually focus on prevention as well? Because to what we were looking at, the traditional security model has always been around, oh, I want this tool because I want to protect us against, I don't know, some kind of, like, oh, IDS, IDS is a great example as well. And you almost wonder, what's the real life use case for that in the cloud when the asset itself is very temporary?
Yeah.
It comes up and down. So unless it's like a super smart AI enabled, I don't know, like a Starlink or something that just keeps recreating itself, if you're getting rid of the infrastructure and bringing it back to the original stand where it did not have anything else, I definitely feel, to your point, abstraction has changed the way people look at security and the skill set. I also wonder, offline we were talking about the whole ledger and Bitcoin space as well, like, you know, how that's kind of evolving. And yes, I feel right now my company's not going to go for a blockchain, but tomorrow they might. But how many people would know about all these new technologies? Like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that goes back to kind of like the people side of it on the modern security stack, the modern, you know, data set, or modern security team that uses data, right? Where it's not just enough to actually use these big data tools, lakes and warehouses, distributed query. And they do have a spot, 100%. I think that's where the industry is going to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, right now, the security team just doesn't have enough freaking time, right? Like, I can't find my freaking butt for my elbow.
Yep.
And I'm just going full steam ahead. So it's really hard for the security team to have parity from a technical acumen spot with the product team, where, you know, would a security engineer on any given organization, if you ran up to them, like, oh, hey, you know, we're going to be building a blockchain app, we're using Hyperledger Fabric, we're using Go for our chain code instead of Java, and, you know, we're going to be streaming out the consensus from this on a Kafka, and then we're going to be writing it to a data warehouse, and this, how do we secure it?
Yeah.
And a security person might be like, and then log on Indeed.com.
just find another job. I think you mentioned data as well, and you talk quite a bit about SecDataOps as well. What does that mean for a lot of people who don't know what SecDataOps is?
Uh-oh, here we go. Yeah, I've been using the data word on purpose, right? So, you know, I've been like, it's not a loaded question, it's loading answers towards you, but yeah, SecDataOps has been kind of like my tongue-in-cheek thing that I've been talking about. You know, it's, you know, for people who follow my content, you know, I talk a lot about harnessing data systems, using data in an effectual way to, like, get intelligence out of it, understanding the context of the business and being able to, you know, better treat risks. Because at the end of the day, no matter what you do, we're trying to treat risk. Right?
Yeah.
We're trying to find it, we're trying to treat it. How we treat it really depends. But SecDataOps is, you know, just like what the juxtaposition sounds like, you know, security, data, and operations, is that's what the modern security team is going to have to run. We've been spoiled by all these tools, right, where it's like, hey, you know, in the past, we had another team running our CMDB. We had other teams running the syslog servers. We had other teams running the infrastructure and the indices for Splunk, right? And
yeah.
We just happened to be able to use it. We were able to carve out some capacity, you know, and then now you move towards like EDRs and CNAPs, where it's like this whole console experience, and outside of dropping down an image,
yeah.
You might not even do that anymore. You have other teams building the images. You have other teams managing the sensor, right? So it's being able to upskill to use, you know, the actual data that's coming out of these tools for meaningful ways, whether that's cyber risk quantification, whether that's building giant data lakes and data warehouses and, you know, running the queries on top of it to be able to put that data together and make sense of it, to be able to, you know, find those threats faster, collapse the attack paths. But then also running the tools ourselves, right? Where at a certain point, like, yeah, there are managed warehouses and lakes and frameworks out there for the modern data stack, right? Not the modern security stack, but I think that, you know, SecDataOps means, you know, actually learning how to use these big data tools, how to run them, understanding APM, SLAs, SLOs, everything. Like, you become a product team unto yourself, and your product is defending all the other products, so have fun.
Yeah, because I think, to what you said, the amount of data, and that's kind of where the SIEM space kind of came in with, right? They basically were like, oh, well, security SIEM is collecting so much data, and then I believe from log aggregators it became SIEMs because, oh, they're doing security incidents. And you're like, oh, wait, what kind of security incidents are you doing? Oh, I have to run the detection for it. But you just basically give me, like I said, a nice visualization of all your logs. And I think there's a talk that Chris Ferris did recently from WarnerBros. He had this image of waves for S3 logs, VPC logs. Like, the logs are just humongous coming in, right? The access logs and stuff. You're like, holy shit, there's a lot of stuff coming in. Just to make sense of all of that, and not having a data person in the team is I don't even know where people would start. Like, I think just to that may, and maybe that's where I believe that, yes, you're right. I think offline you gave an example for big companies which are like in your the fintechs of the world that are going in, or like how they are dealing with, like, they have to have a data person in the team. Like, do you actually feel like it's already happening right now where people are people in security have data people as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the team that I built at IHS Market, when we built Cyber Risk Graph, I mean, we were a sec data ops team, right? Where we hired data scientists, data engineers, data analysts. We were working with other data people as well, and we had huge systems. I mean, we built our own graph. It had 20 billion unique, you know, relationships within it. We were running, you know, several petabytes of data, data lakes, data marts, NoSQL, SQL, documents, graphs, like in-memory caches, you name it. We were running all of it, right? It wasn't just some tool you could pull off the shelf. So, you know, that was a shameless plug for the dream team. Love you guys, whoever you are out there. But, you know, there are teams doing it. I mean, Netflix, I think, comes to mind, of
That's
course.
Right, yeah,
you know,
they
have their own quantification team.
Yeah.
And there's other places that do it, you know, that deal with that high volume data. You know, you think of like APM companies, clickstream companies, ag tech companies, even, you know, agricultural tech, right? With like IoT and all this stuff coming in, you need to keep pace with the speed of your data, the speed of your business. So, it is happening out there slowly,
yeah.
But it's kind of weird, you know, when you bring up, not weird, but it's ironic. You brought up like how the SIM modernized, where we went from just, you know, dropping, not even having logs, or it's like, you know, we're reading sensors, and then, you know, Apache Lucene comes along, right, with like indexes, and then companies are like, okay, we can build on top of index and, you know, spin it off, market it directly, you know, kind of the Splunks, the Q-Radars of the world did that. And then now it's kind of come even further. It's like, hey, you know, these indexes, searching indices, it's not scaling. Like, at a certain size, you hit diminishing returns. You're spending so much money on your Splunk builder. And I'm not trying to beat up on Splunk. Splunk is great, you know, within their own rights, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's like, they were trying to show us something where it's like, hey, you're going to naturally need to gravitate towards that, you know, data thing, because eventually, you know, right now for like flow logs and, you know, S3 access logs and CloudTrail, it's like, okay, like that's in a format I could use, but it's like, well, what happens when the modern product team has a staff engineer and they want to run checkmarks, and these people want to run Sneak, and these people want to run cybersecurity, and these people want to run something else, and these guys are using GitLab. It's like, do you have the skills to even interact with those APIs, grab that data, normalize that data, move that data, enrich that data, and then put it into the final format or formats, right, as it moves up and down your value chain for you to actually get the value out of it, whether it's I want a dashboard for KPIs, I want to define KRIs, I want to quantify risk. So you're going to have that. Like, you cannot get by. And that doesn't necessarily mean forcing security engineers to play double duty as data engineers, because that is a very specific skill, thinking that way.
Mm.
But that means to start with, like, building a team from the onset, like a sec data ops team, hiring data people, like actually bringing those folks in your organization, kind of learning by osmosis. And then at the end of the day, you know, I think we're going to see new job titles out there, like Sec Data Ops Engineer, Security Data Science, Security Data Engineer.
Yeah.
That would be kind of like the regular thing, right? Like, we think of it today, where what's a regular job title? Cloud Security Engineer, SOC Analyst 1, everybody is that.
Yeah.
10 years from now, everybody's going to be, you know, Sec Data Ops Engineer, God willing.
Because there will be that many, I mean, because we're already collecting a lot of data, and a lot of people talk about from a SIEM perspective, what they find the most expensive is just the volume is what they use as a dial to charge you more or charge you less, and everyone's like, well, do we really need those logs? Because I don't want to increase the bill over here. And that's not a great question to be asking if one thinks about it. Because when an incident happens, you want to log from every application or every data point that was possible. So in your mind, the thing that you had built with the data, sec data ops people in your previous company, what were these data folks doing? Because you almost, for certain context, does everyone need a sec data ops person? Like, I think I'm from like a small company. I have one person who's doing everything security. Would I still need a sec data ops? Or do I just do it after a certain point where, oh, I've got hundreds of applications versus one application? Like, at what point do people should think about this?
Right. I think everybody should think about it, and how that structures. Does that mean you need to go out tomorrow and hire a security data engineer or just a data engineer in general? No, you could probably get by with like scaling up and be like, okay, like, you know, what's a way that I could scale this? And you start with something small, right? And this boils down to, it depends, right,
on
the size.
Yeah.
I think everybody should either be scaling up or looking to hire those people, right, because they think of data in a different way. Like, we're just thinking of it like, oh, here's the JSON format that this specific log is going to come in, and if I write, you know, if I grep or I awk it or I tail it or I cut it or I, you know, maybe I know SQL if I wrote a SQL thing, or maybe I'm using Amazon Athena or something like that. It's like, that's the only way I think about it. But then, you know, the data people are like, hey, if I want to move 10,000 records into this system in this amount of time, how can I do it without getting throttled and using an event-driven architecture, right?
Very different way of thinking.
How do you answer that question? Like, does your security engineers, do I understand, like, when should I use Kafka versus Kinesis versus SQS? How big should my batch size be?
Yeah.
Do I care if I have 5,000 invocations of Lambda? You know, like, how do I actually, you know, meter all these things? How do I operate it, right? That's where the data ops part is. The ops part comes into play. So I think that everybody should be thinking it that way, because we're already at the point where we have so much data. And you're right, on the SIM, people have to make the decisions if it's like, hey, what can I get away with not ingesting?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're getting metered on, you know, gigabits per second.
That's right.
Or what can I get away with not retaining for so long? Or can I drop these indexes? Or do I even need to keep this data?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cases where it's like, oh, you must keep the data because of regulations.
Yes.
And outside of that excuse, right, because it is an excuse.
Of course.
You know, people are having a hard time. So it's like, well, you know, what if you built a real-time system? What if you didn't need to use a SIM? What if you could just use a lake on Glacier or on, you know, Google's bucket or Azure storage accounts, right? So if you don't have that data, you know, architect, engineer, analyst, scientist on your team, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to be stuck with Splunk.
Yeah, and to your point, how do you, I think that probably even extends to the point that, you know, people talk about anomaly behavior detection as well. If you're not collecting the data, how do you know there's an anomaly? Because you haven't normalized for, oh, this is my normal pattern. And I mean, that's like a whole another kettle of fish at that point in time. But where does one even start with this? Like, to your point, if it is, people can start thinking about this from day one as well, how would you recommend them start talking or at least thinking about this with a small team, and then we kind of scale up to, I think you guys had about 300 plus applications at the previous role?
Yeah, I just read 900 or so different applications.
Wow.
Some of them were like fat apps running like on a thick client somewhere.
Oh my God.
And then other things were, you know, running on VMware Cloud or Alibaba or AWS.
Yeah, it is that as well. The complexity of where your data is coming from. Like, the source is like so complex these days. Like, I think you in an offline conversation, you mentioned about Kubernetes, containers, and there's like, you can just, I mean, IoT devices, anything else you want, anything else that you want to throw in there. How does one start? Like, I think, what's day one like for people who are a small company?
Right, yeah, I think, you know, just from day one, it's like, take, you know, kind of account of what you have. Like, what are my tools? What data am I actually collecting? Are you collecting any data, right? That's a good place to start. It's like, hey, the CNET tool, this EDR tool, if you even have any, right? It's like, get the tools up and running and let's collect data.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just start with like basic metrics, right? Like vulnerability management, it's a great place to start because it's both easy and extremely difficult at the same time, right? Where it's like, do you know all your vulnerabilities? Can you measure coverage of vulnerability management sensors? You know, how old is the oldest vulnerability? You know, what's the average severity? How long do they live? Do vulnerabilities flip back on? Like, do they get reintroduced? You know, that could point to a code quality thing, right? So pick a use case, pick a source, be like, what are we doing with the data? Trying to make metrics of it and then build up from there.
Yeah.
And then you might not even have the skills to be like, okay, like, I don't know how to use the API for Sneak. I don't know how to get all the findings out of Sneak, for instance, or I don't know how to get all the findings out of like AWS Security Hub. How do I do it?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you start there, right? So it depends on like the maturity of the existing team, kind of your capabilities, what you're doing, what you're trying to solve for. And if any of these things I'm saying, it's like, oh, I don't know what a KR is. I don't know what a KPI is. APIs, like, I have to get what data out of who?
Yeah.
You know, you start there, but what if you're at that point already? You have good KPIs, you have good KRIs, maybe you have a dashboard of Power BI or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, what can we do to kind of evolve this? Maybe we want to look into risk quantification. Maybe we want to look into building our own lake. Maybe we want to see if we can get more efficient about ingesting data, about aging out data, about enriching the data. So it's, I know like, people want like, just like, tell me, damn it, what to do. And it's like, it's not that simple, right? Because everybody's business is different, just as we're different as human beings.
Yeah.
Everybody's data requirements are going to be different. So
one of the conversations of starting today with the data problem is, okay, what kind of logs? I think you mentioned that already. What does day two look like then? What is day two in terms of, okay, we've started today, we now have 20 applications. So one application, I've heard your advice, I've gone, okay, I need to figure out what my KPI is, I need to figure out what am I really doing with it, what kind of logs do I need? Now, step two, company's growing, I've got a lot more applications. How does the data problem change from a security perspective as you kind of mature as an organization?
Right, yeah. So, you know, at this point, you know, that kind of day two orb looks like where it's like, all right, we already have like a good suite of KPIs defined, we're collecting them and whatnot.
Yep.
Usually the thing that doesn't move is like the way that you do business as a security team today, right? Like at day one, like as you're collecting that data, you might be pulling some of it from a SIM, some of it from a lake or wherever, but you know, the way you still have your SIM up, right? You know, so now it's like, how do we actually harness this data for us, right? Because day one, you're harnessing the data for other people. It's like you're trying to help the business understand. It's like, here are my risks, here's the threats, here's the evidence, right? It's like, look, you know, we're enriching our inbound network logs, and you know, 40% of them are matching against IOCs that we have, and what we have is like a drop in the bucket. They're going to change all the time.
Yeah.
You know, as a way to articulate. That's a very easy conversation and a loaded one to have, right? We don't get into like threat attribution and the usage of IOCs, but you know, now it's like, how do you do it? And a good example is like, you know, maybe you have a SOC and they have, you know, I think you look at any SOC analyst computer, you're going to find like Markdown or a text file or a Word doc that has a bunch of like go-to queries, or they're going to have it in their own Slack channel or Teams channel. It's like, hey, like, let's start collecting requirements for our own team. And that's what we did, you know, and that's what I do right now at Lightspin. It's like, hey, like, what do you need to do to make your job easier? Like, what sort of questions are you answering? And it was the same thing on the Dream Team when we had CRG at IHS Market was, hey, SOC, like, how do you do your job? How do you hunt threats? How do you interdict threats? Hey, controls team, like, how do you actually measure controls? How do you know that something's operating right? Like, do you know if all of our queues are freaking encrypted in the end, and if they match to a business unit that requires end-to-end encryption because of an MSSA or, you know, some other way, right? Now it's like trying to operate as a data team. So, you know, learning SQL, writing playbooks, writing, you know, Jupyter notebooks to kind of take all that, you know, insider knowledge of queries and then turning it that way. Maybe creating a view in your BI tool or creating a feed and showing your controls and GRC team how to collect data. So when the next audit comes around, we're like, hey, we chose these TSCs for a SOC 2 report. We have this specific control that talks about encryption. Get me a feed. It's like, no, you pull the feed, or hey, here's a dashboard that has it, you know, in 5-minute increments, right? So that's where you start to mature it, because once you do it for yourself,
yeah,
and you have skin in the game, so to speak,
yeah,
that's, I think, when you get a lot more skill and you get a lot better, because it's like, hey, we're playing for the home team now, like, let's not let ourselves down.
Actually, to your point, now that I think a bit more about this, it also makes sense from perspective that everyone, SOC requires data. Yeah, in a way, if you're trying to automate compliance, that requires data. If you're trying to do cloud security, that requires data.
Yeah.
And all these data points are coming from API-enabled systems as well. Like, your cloud is API-enabled. Most of your SIEM solutions are API-enabled as well. We mentioned Sneak earlier. Like, those guys and others in the space of AppSpec are also nowadays API-enabled, because you can't be a developer-first security without having APIs. So we have all these data points, but to your point, I would probably put in the skills of, well, I won't say hacking, but more like it's the Python engineering, if you use that for automation.
Yeah.
That's already a thing. And Python is also the baseline for a lot of big data projects as well, for a lot of people working on Notebook. I also wanted to kind of bring another perspective that if these skills are kind of showing up as you kind of grow as an organization, is that, it feels like that's still not the point when you would hire a data person. It almost sounds like you need to do all this groundwork first before you bring in a data person, right? Otherwise, the person is just basically doing your job technically for that point. Is that right? Is that how you think about it?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, for sure, you know, I'll use a skin in the game term again, that like your current team today, you know, if they don't know how to write, you know, scripts, if they don't understand Python or whatever language that you're going to choose, right? Because, you know, there's plenty of, you know, reasons to use Rust or Go or Node, whatever.
Infrastructure as code, however you're doing it.
Whatever you want to do, I think that everybody should get to a good baseline. And then maybe, you know, as you're going on this data journey, be like, hey, what questions am I trying to answer? Like, you don't want to go at it scattered brain. It's like, whether you're a CISO right now or, you know, just talk to your CISO, be like, hey, like, what are you worried about? What, you know, risks do we have currently that are well documented, and how can we prove them with data, right? It's like, let's prove an assumption. You know, I know I answered the last two questions, right, day one and day two. You know, you start from there, and then it's like, okay, like, what data do we need to answer these questions? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we want to know but we don't know currently? You know, so maybe the first data hire is like a data architect or a consultant, right? You get somebody in incremental where it's like, hey, you know, here's our requirements, or maybe you don't know them, right? Maybe
Like
you need somebody to come in and measure, like, what's our current data throughput today? What's our consumption? How much net new logs are we getting per day, right? Like across CloudTrail, VPCs, like what systems will we have to like build or get to like meet these outcomes, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you know, get your boy to advise. Give me that bag, you know what I'm saying?
Because a lot of the conversations that we've had, like we touched on the whole Bitcoin ledger thing earlier, it's not, and this could be a thing that we have in tech as well, that, oh, I want to give this a shot myself first. But at what point do you call an expert? What you mentioned, like, oh, maybe call a data architect. Because one of the things that you mentioned earlier around the fact that when I'm trying to solve a data problem, I would not think about from a perspective of, oh, I've got 10,000 rows, how do I make sure that the throughput is not disturbed? I just want to get that across. I want to make some sense of it. Like, I'm not optimized. It's like a day one software developer. I just want to write a code that I can do 1 + 1 = 2.
Right.
Whereas a professional or a bit more experienced developer is going to be like, okay, I'm going to define a class for it. I'm going to see that I can change, I can use a variable. So it's not just 1 + 1. It can do anything you give it. But in a way that if I pass my code on to you, you can understand what it says, so there's enough comments. Like, you know, there's a very different, mature way of thinking when you do software development as well. I feel like that to what you're saying, the data problem is similar as well. Every security person who might be listening to this and going, oh, I can do that. I can totally define what API should be.
Right.
I can do ETL. How hard is ETL?
Exactly. No, that's a great point, right? That's why when I talk about SecDataOps, I'm like, it's less a framework and it's more like a lifestyle. Like, when I say like staying dangerous, like, it's like, that's a lifestyle, right? That's not just like a SecDataOps isn't something you do. It might be a role one day, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it requires that whole line of thinking where, you know, to your point, it's like, okay, cool, I'm getting in, you know, 50 gigabytes of log data a day. Can you even tell how much log data you're getting? And then it's like, if you want to move that 50 GB from like S3 to somewhere else, you know, do you know how many records are in a 50 GB? Can you enrich it? Do you need all the fields in it? Could you drop it?
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, yeah, I'm just going to send it. I'll just do S3 copy and whatever. And all of a sudden you're getting like, oh, you know, a 429 back, you know, request rate limit exceeded. And then it's like, you go on Stack Exchange, and it's like, oh, that means you're querying it too fast. Use exponential backoff. Uh-huh. And then a security engineer goes, what the hell is an exponential backoff? I don't even know what an exponent is anymore, right? So it kind of gets into those, and then we need to get the mini gritty, right? It's like, okay, do I know I want to use a queue, a pub sub, a broker?
Yeah.
Do I understand my throughput to, you know, lower my invocation rate down, to lower my cost, to get the code running faster? You know, maybe you're moving this stuff to like a DynamoDB. It's like, how do you, you know, maintain, you know, a certain write consumption unit level.
Yeah.
And then you have to pattern that with like, how fast do I want the data? How long do I need to keep the data for? And then when you add more nuances on top of it, quickly a team gets tapped out of their expertise. And then maybe at that point, you bring in the data engineer.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, oh, hey, you build NoSQL systems, you know Kafka really well, sweet, you come on.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you hire a principal level person who could kind of do train the trainer. Right, because now you have a problem to solve. I don't think you should just hire a person without a problem to solve.
Yeah.
That's not fair to you. That's not fair to them.
Of course.
You know, that's just, you're wasting everybody's time at that point. You're not getting any value.
Yeah, and I'm 100% on the money as well, because the more I think about it, it's like, it's the same solution, and going back to what we talked about in abstractions, because we had the same solution that was doing log aggregation, and what majority security architects out there were just saying to people, hey, Jonathan, you have this great app. That's good. Send me all the logs.
Yeah.
Because you, at least initially, when you have a scene for the first time, you're not thinking about the cost, you're just thinking about send me all the logs and I'll figure it out as seam then. But 9 out of 10 scenarios, that seam is being managed by someone else and not by you as an architect. So it's been gone across. They have no idea what this application is. They're like, oh, what do you really want me to look at? And you're thinking at that point, oh, I should have defined the KPIs before I send them across. But then I'm just moving on to the next project. So see you guys.
Right.
You can figure this out. And I definitely find that it's really fascinating that, okay, once you've figured out that you have a problem to solve, and instead of jumping and going, I want a data architect or I want a data engineer, let's define what our source logs are going to be in the first place. Because that's what I'm taking away from all this. And for people who are listening and thinking, oh, this is so overwhelming, there's so much to do. Like, I didn't realize I don't have the budget for a data person. But maybe the step one is not to have a data person, just to understand what you have, to what exactly what you're saying, what the source logs are. Do I need all those source logs? If there was an incident in this particular application, would I really care about this log at that point in time?
Right.
And if not, then maybe I can ignore it. Is that a good way to think about it?
Yeah, no, that is definitely a good way to think about it. It's even like, do I need to worry about it? Because a lot of the times, you know, being a part of those conversations, right, whether it's a well-architected review, a threat modeling conversation, it's like, oh, send all these logs. And the team's like, well, that's adding to overhead and complexity. We can't send these logs. They're like, oh, well, we want to be able to monitor it. You know, we want to put it into our own SIM. Why do you need it centrally? Like, I've had those conversations with CTOs, SVPs, and I totally get it. And,
yeah.
You know, that, again, it goes back to the maturity thing where, like, as a security person, you understand it. It's like, look, like, you're there to protect people.
That's right.
Right? Because at the end of the day, the data, it doesn't care. It's ones and zeros on silicone somewhere. Like, it doesn't even know it exists. Like, data doesn't know it's data, but it represents somebody real. Somebody's brother, sister, grandmother, a stakeholder, a shareholder, a customer, a partner, you know, you, perhaps, right? And it's like, we need to treat it with that same respect and severity, and then thinking back, working backwards from that, it's like, what am I doing today? Like, not defining KPIs, not having metrics, not having good data quality. Like, that isn't helping to protect anybody. That's just, you know, making it easier for the freaking bad guy, because while you're looking for needles in a stack of needles and you're, you know, look like a pit bull who just attacked the porcupine, you know, the attacker's just made off of everybody's data and everybody's having a bad day. But, you know, it is a good way to look at it. It's like, let's just start with the basics first. It's like, what questions am I trying to solve?
Yeah.
What risks do I think we have? Like, do I even know what risks we think? Like, what's our threat environment look like? Like, to get to set the option, you need to do security really well. You need to do architecture really well. You need to understand engineering. You need to have, you know, good instincts about operating and maintaining and engineering. And then you can put it all together. It's not just something you jump into. It's like, oh, sweet. I'll just send my security team for a week to a SANS course and then a week to a Pandas course. And then they'll be good. They won't be good. They'll know stuff and then they'll be overwhelmed and they'll be on Indeed looking for a new job because you're a crazy person.
Yeah, I hit this on the nail as well, because I think another point maybe worthwhile coming across is maturity scaling, because some people may already have defined that. What does it look like at a super mature kind of, like, a, I mean, like, you know, if you use an example earlier where you had 300 plus applications, what did that look like? How far did you get to the point where, oh, this is like super mature. Like, this is what a really mature seg data ops kind of space would look like.
Yeah, I think maturity, you know, or nirvana or close to it in the seg data ops or just the modern security data stack security team, right?
Yeah.
The self-service. That's what you eventually want to build for, where you get it to the point where people are able to access the data, that they're able to get their own views, that they can operate on top of it, right? Because when you start off, you'll be telling people things, right? It's like, okay, these are my metrics. These are my EDR sensor coverage. This is my VM sensor coverage. This is my, you know, CVEs outstanding. Here's all the exploitable CVEs percentage. And then, you know, you're using that to, like, task people and bonk them over the head, which is what we do today, right? It's like, oh, look, a critical CSPM finding, bonk, like, you go fix that bad person. It's like, oh, well, it's this way because we're testing a POC on Hyperledger Fabric. And it's like, what's a fabric? Okay.
Is that a database?
Technically.
Oh, it's actually. Like, so is that SQL or is that?
Yeah, you know, so I think getting to that self-service, right, where people could, you know, think, and then that's where you start layering on the advanced capabilities. It's like, now we have enough data, we understand what our problems are, we understand our metrics, you know, now it's like, can we do it faster? Can we do it in near real time? You know, do I even need to store this log somewhere? Can I just analyze it in real time because I have, you know, 7 years of data, I understand my seasonality, right? Or I understand people's behavior outputs and programs. Now you're kind of looking at it from like a UEBA identity space.
Yeah.
But I think self-service is what you build for. And that's a lot harder than what it sounds like. It's like, oh, it's easy. We'll just build an API on top of it. It's like, okay, cool. Brainiac, you built a freaking API gateway with a Lambda that's reading from a table that you're writing, you know, on average, probably throughout the week, you know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of write consumption units.
It's a product.
It's a product at that point. Like, you're building SaaS tools.
That's right.
Like, you need to handle that scale of people answering questions.
Ooh, actually, that's a good point, because you're almost like having an internal product, like internal SaaS product being created with the abstraction that the end user at the point doesn't really care. Like, they're just looking at data points that are relevant as well. which kind of reminds me of the whole secure data lake, because it will define, like, so people who are listening about sec data is going, oh, would you say security data lake is like a foundation on which this is built on?
It could be, right? I think you're going to need a data store, right? Whether it's a graph, a lake, a warehouse, and I'm pretty sure that you'll probably use two out of three, if not all three, right? So, you know, just a data lake is a system that could contain, you know, structured, semi-structured, and unstructured data, right? And people are like, well, what the hell is that? It's like, okay, you know, something very well structured could be, you know, and, you know, an example for all of it could be like, you know, you have PDF docs, you have, you know, free text, kind of like CEF logs, and then maybe you have JSON documents, you know, so that's kind of like the different things that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And instead of like a SIM, like you're not going to index a PDF inside of a freaking SIM. You're not going to put free text files inside of a SIM. Like a SIM wants it in a very specific format. It may have a tool that you could license or you could use to like transform records. It may flatten JSON for you, but it's like, well, that's a half measure. I don't want to flatten the JSON. It needs to be a nested list or a nested dictionary for a reason, right?
Yeah,
so that's where the data lake comes into, and security data lake isn't, you know, there are companies out there where like Panther, for instance, you know, kind of builds this itself, even though it's more a distributed query. You know, Snowflake spends a lot of time talking about the security data lake, the security data warehouse. So it's not anything special, it's just a data lake, right?
Yeah.
You build your data lake, you understand your access patterns, how you're writing, like all the operational data stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And then you're using it for security outcomes, right? And
right.
I guess a practical example would be, you know, maybe taking, you know, don't use lake formation, but, you know, building your own fake lake formation, right? Which is what my side project Synthetic Sun was supposed to be, but it's neither here nor there. So it's taking those VPC logs, those CloudTrail logs, application-specific logs, and then maybe even pulling, like, data from the APIs, right? Like, you know, EC2 described instances and, you know, AOB described load balancers. You're taking all that, you're putting it in, like, different paths, right, inside of S3, and then you're running, you know, queries on top of it. Maybe you're extracting that data with another, you know, with the SDK, and then you're putting it together with pandas, and then giving somebody a CSV, dropping that CSV into that same lake, right? Because now this is your structured data, and then you're having your QuickSight on top of it or something else for BI.
Yeah.
So that could be a practical example of, like, building up towards it. But it definitely plays a part if that's going to be, you know, it's pick your poison, really.
It is. I think I would also probably go to the point that, would you say people would stop needing to require a SIEM if they were to build a security data lake?
Eventually, right? Because, you know, right now we're dealing with companies that are even SMBs that have petabyte scale data. You know, if you think of a Netflix, I'm sure that they have exabytes of data that they're dealing with, right, from their perspective, just because of how big they are in a streaming business. And then, you know, it's like, who wouldn't want to jackpot Netflix? If I was an adversary, I'd have Netflix freaking up on my wall. I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, spin that up and I'm going to be in there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would be super motivated to attack Netflix if I was an adversary. So, but, you know, there are technological challenges, right, and stopgaps where, you know, S3, as great as mature as S3 is, it will fall over at a certain point of ingesting data. Like, you can only get a lot of data, like big data, like actual big data. You can only get it into so many places so fast all at once. And that's why people are kind of looking at it from like a distributed query spot where it's like, okay, maybe stuff that's better suited, that's cheaper to put in Snowflake, we put in Snowflake.
Yeah.
We put some stuff in Glacier. Well, not really Glacier because you can't get it that fast, but like S3.
Yeah.
And then maybe we put some stuff into like our SIM. And then you have companies coming up like Query.ai and there's another one that's like on the tip of my tongue and I can't think of it. Anvil Logic, I think, is the name of the company. And then, you know, maybe Panthers and Hunters, where it's like they have distributed querying. They all do it different ways. I think probably Query.ai and Anvil Logic are the closest to like a true distributed query kind of thought, where it's like, hey, keep your data sources and how you do it, and then, you know, well, there's that abstraction thing again.
Yeah.
And that's why, to answer your previous question, I said that I think that we'll probably have like a different multitude of it. But, you know, being realistic, seeing, you know, massive scaled SIMs operating in massive scaled SIM companies, it's not just that easy, right? There's so much ancient stuff, ancient workloads where it's like, you know, don't touch that cron job, don't touch that freaking server. Like, we need that one server, right? Here, because it's bringing this mission critical log and we have no idea the script. It's like, you know, this pipe delimited op grep tail thing, and I have no idea how to write bash, so please don't touch it. But starting fresh, I think that you could probably go without a SIM.
Yeah, and to your point, I also want to extend that to the point of like, if people listening to this are going, oh, I probably should start working on this today so I can work on this tomorrow because I don't need to use a SIM. But the harder part over here is what you just touched on, where some of these providers are actually doing the extraction and transformation. That's probably the most important part, because the structured and unstructured data, as you mentioned earlier, how many old school applications still have unstructured data? How many different kind of sources you're pulling data from? Yeah. And whether it's unstructured or structured, you still need to, you almost need to think about what's a language that you can convert all this into, that you can query through it, so that, or it doesn't matter where the log is coming from, whether it's coming from Apache, coming from VPC, coming from S3, coming from Azure, coming from Google Cloud, wherever it's coming from, you kind of have to bring them all together, transform that into, is this encrypted? Literally, that's the question you're trying to answer across everything else. But the question is that simple. Like, if you were to use that as KPI, everything should be encrypted. Like, just to answer that question across, say, 5 different kind of data sources, that's not an easy job.
Yeah, it's not, because, you know, just think of it this way, and this goes back to the whole data thinking, right, where the security engineer really going to show up and be like, oh, yeah, you know, I'll just write some Moto 3 up, and it's like, okay, cool. Then you realize that it's like, oh, SQS, and SNS, and Kinesis, and EBS, and my S3, that the data format it's returned in is all completely different. If you try to shove that into, like, a relational database, into a SIM, like into the same index, it would take a big crap on you. I think actually could probably handle it if it's like in the same like dictionary, and then you would just have like missing values. You could probably put it in NoSQL, but it kind of goes into that. It's like, all right, how do I normalize all this log data and get it into a format that I need? How do I query it? Whether I'm querying it directly with, you know, maybe I'm like parsing out the JSON and then, you know, doing some if else and then having different lists in memory and be like, okay, we'll put the bad stuff here. It's like, all right, we're not 100% encrypted, but, you know, that's exactly right.
Fair enough. The way, so, I mean, that's kind of most of the questions that I had in mind for our conversation. And I mean, we can talk for hours about this, because I think it's definitely a fascinating conversation for me personally as well. Where can people find you on the internet to have more thoughts on the space, or they're trying to go into the space? As you said, we throw some money back at you as well. Where can people find you?
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I have my privacy settings so pretty good. But you know, I'll be commenting on the, you know, on the show and everything. And I also harass Ashish. They put me on the show. So you can find me out there, but I don't have any other social. No TikTok. Delete your TikToks. All of you out there. I know you want to do the floss of the no. Just on LinkedIn.
So. Awesome. Right. No, thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you. I love the conversation. So hopefully others in the world are also trying to do some data ops or sec data ops. But this was the episode. See you in the next one. Peace.